You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Time now to go to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline, and we are very happy to welcome in Teresa Walker, who covers Tennessee Titans for the Associated Press. Teresa, welcome to the show.
My pleasure. How are you doing today?
We're doing very, very well here. Happy to have Hugh Jackson aboard, and one of the big things now is seeing who he's going to fill out his staff with, and a lot of the attention defensive coordinator focused on Ray Horton. And we know that the one story came out that Ray Horton was insulted, and then Ray Horton says he wasn't insulted. What's the latest you're hearing on Ray Horton? And let's go with the relationship that he has with his current employer, of course, the Tennessee Titans.
Well, that's the thing. You know, they said on Monday when they introduced Mike Mularkey as the head coach that, you know, they had four total candidates for the head coaching position. One was a last-minute addition. They didn't say who that was, but Ray Horton was the last confirmed candidate. He interviewed on Saturday. They announced that he had finished the interview around 12:20 local time. And then, you know, about 5 hours, not even 5 hours later, they, you know, announced that Mike Mularkey is their head coach. So, Mike Mularkey said he's going to be talking to Ray Horton, you know, that the idea came up when they talked Sunday morning about, you know, maybe talking to the Browns. Did come up in their conversation, but, you know, didn't say exactly where they're at. So, you know, he did say he was going to talk to Dick LeBeau yesterday, and is expecting, hoping that he'll stick around, you know, thinking, you know, how much can they continue on here? We're kind of in that nether region. Mike Mularkey is interviewing, trying to put his staff together. But, you know, the reports are that Ray Horton, you know, is interviewing for the same job up in Cleveland. So, you know, can Mike Mularkey try to keep him? Does he want to keep him? Does Ray Horton want to go? Stay tuned. These are the days of our NFL lives, right?
Yes. They definitely are. And that all being said, would you expect, if in fact Ray Horton did leave to come up here to Cleveland and become the defensive coordinator, that Mularkey, you know, knows he has Dick LeBeau as kind of a fail-safe on that staff to assume that role and maybe either promote from within or, you know, obviously dig into his Rolodex and start adding, you know, a new young talent there that would essentially play a similar scheme to Ray Horton in that 3-4 style defense and bring them into Tennessee as well?
Well, he definitely is wanting to keep Dick LeBeau around. But if that doesn't work out, Mike Mularkey has said that, you know, on radio the last couple of days, that he'd be open to making a change. And, you know, that's where the Titans are kind of in some iffy waters. You know, when Ray Horton came in with Ken Wisenhunt two seasons ago, they made the switch from 4-3 to a 3-4 front, and it wasn't very pretty in 2014. And, you know, they were 27th in defense, total defense. Now, when Dick LeBeau came in and they got a few more pieces, Brian Arakpo definitely was a huge addition to this defense this last season. They jumped to 13th in total defense, but, you know, they did still give up a ton of points. So, you know, how much of that improvement was Dick LeBeau? How much of it was just simple addition on the roster that side of the ball? It's kind of tough. But if the Titans were to suddenly say, okay, we're going to go back to a 4-3, they still have a lot of those pieces, but, that's a lot of start and stopping and changing a course. Be very interesting to see which way they end up going.
How would you describe Ray Horton's 2 years there in Tennessee? And did you get a sense of if the players liked him and if you thought that there was real tangible progress? I know the rankings, you know, up to 12th this year in total defense, but scoring defense still amongst the worst in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, players seem to like Ray. I mean, you know, but I'll say this. When you've got Dick LeBeau around, you know, Hall of Famer, a guy who, you know, let's face it, you know, he'll be 80 in September, and so much of his life has been as a player and definitely quality coach. It's tough. You know, the Titans were, you could tell that they were kind of, I don't want to say in awe, but they appreciated who they were dealing with when they were talking with Dick LeBeau. So, you know, there was definitely a glamour factor maybe with Dick LeBeau. And you know, it's tough not to come off maybe in comparison not as good because, you know, you're standing next to Dick LeBeau. Who could stand next to him and not maybe pale a little bit in comparison?
No, you're definitely right about that. And I'm going to, you know, jump off topic from, you know, Ray Horton here for a minute. You know, obviously last year you guys, you know, go quarterback at number two. The Cleveland Browns sit at number two this year. Ironically, who sits in front of us? But the Tennessee Titans with the number one overall pick. What are some of the rumors, you know, there in and around the Tennessee area in regards to what they may do at number one?
Well, they definitely would love to be able to trade down. The new GM on Monday made it very clear he'll be listening to all offers because they've got a lot of needs. So with the quarterback filled in Marcus Mariota, they feel pretty confident that they've got their franchise quarterback. So they could go offensive line with a Laremy Tunsil if they pick at number one, but they need more people. So trading down is going to be the best thing and the thing that they want to do the most. Problem is, you know, they've got to have some team fall in love with a quarterback that wants to get ahead of the Browns and try to get that one. So their best hope, Jared Goff, Paxton Lynch, somebody just kind of starts jumping off the board. Paxton Lynch, I've covered him at Memphis, really tall kid, can run and throw, a big strong arm, but can somebody fall in love with one of those guys that they absolutely want to get ahead of Cleveland? That's going to be key to what the offers come in.
And with John Robinson coming in from New England, yeah, trading down certainly becomes a big possibility there for the Titans. What would you say for a team that has a lot of needs? It seems to me you have an opportunity to get somebody that can protect, you know, your franchise quarterback with Laremy Tunsil. You do that. Joey Bosa would be obviously an intriguing prospect as well. What do you see as the biggest needs for the Titans?
Biggest need are positions, but, you know, they need more bodies. Now, Tunsil would be great at number one, but, guys, if they can trade down, Jalen Ramsey fills the other big need on this team, which is at secondary. So, you know, he's a cornerback out of Florida State and a Nashville native, so you would win on a few fronts there because fans need something to get excited about. And then you could either go with a lineman, you know, offensive lineman is a huge need as well, but, you know, you could also get a wide receiver for, you know, a Josh Doctson or Laquon Treadwell.
Yep.
Messing all those L's from Ole Miss up. But, that's, you know, they've got options, and that's the best thing. You know, they can drop down a few spots, and they'll be able to find somebody to fit the need.
Last year, I was very jealous when at pick number 40, the Tennessee Titans took Doriel Green Beckham, who really finally got an opportunity to play towards the end of his rookie year. I thought came on strong. What do you think of Doriel Green Beckham, and how has he adjusted to the NFL game, and what are you expecting for him in year two?
Well, it's going to depend on just how much he works. Mike Mularkey said his ceiling is limited only by DGB. He definitely came on later in the season and showed that, you know, he has got physical ability. I mean, he's just so big, so tall, and so strong. And when, you know, DBs can bounce off of him when he's going up and being physical for that ball. But, you know, he's got to watch his weight this offseason. You know, weight was a factor for him and something he was trying to get down from the instant he showed up in Nashville. And it's something that he kept working on. And, you know, his weight seemed to move a little bit. You know, I've lost 6 pounds. Well, where are you at? I'm around 240. Well, they'd like to have him around 235, 230. Can he get there? That's going to be a challenge. And they're changing wide receiver coaches. Sean Jefferson left, I think, for Miami. So, you know, they're going to have a new voice in that room. Can he do that? If so, they've got an absolute chance there to have a monster receiver in him. And Kendall Wright, a guy who's had a 1,000-yard receiving season, he had a lot of injuries this last year. Can they get him healthy and pair those two and get some more targets? You know, when a tight end is your top receiver, as it was for Tennessee Titans with Delanie Walker, that's not the best thing. You want to have you want to have a receiver do that. We'll see if they can fill that spot.
Yeah, when you draft a quarterback young, obviously there's growing pains, especially for a guy like Marcus Mariota, who's thrown right into the fire and started all year. What are some of the things that you can grab from Marcus Mariota that you thought he did very well and what you would think he's probably focusing on and trying to improve throughout this offseason?
Well, his speed at getting the ball out, it's just really impressive. You know, his first touchdown in the NFL, a short, you know, pass that Kendall Wright took for a touchdown. Tampa Bay, you know, he did the play fake and boom, ball was very impressive. The way he worked under center, you know, coming from the read, you know, zone there in Oregon, we're all thinking, can he get up under center? Can he handle the snap? He's had no problems with that his first year in the NFL. So he needs to work on his dropbacks, handoffs to running backs. That's something they definitely want him to improve on. But, you know, just reading defenses, you know, going up against Dick LeBeau's defense as a rookie definitely helped him identify and get very comfortable with that. But obviously he can improve. And, you know, his bigger thing showed that he can play 16 games. Unfortunately, the pass protection was such that, you know, he got injured and hurt the left MCL, missed 2 games, hurt the right MCL, missed two games, both because people did not pick up blitzes well enough. And, you know, if he could play 16 games in his second year, that might be the biggest thing that helped him build on that rookie season.
Talking with Teresa Walker, who covers the Titans for the AP. Teresa, last question I'll leave you with, kind of simple. Is Ray Horton the defensive coordinator of the Tennessee Titans in 2016?
At this point, Magic 8-Ball would have to say most likely not.
Most likely not, which puts him in the mix for our job. Teresa, appreciate the time very much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
My pleasure.
All right, Teresa Walker, our guest there on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline, covers the Titans for the AP at 2:30. Bucky Brooks, NFL.com media analyst, will be with us, debuted his big board 1.0, and we will talk about that at 2:30. But when we come back, phone lines 216-578-0850. Zagura, Wilhelm, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Zagur and Wilhelm, 216-578-0850. Let's go to the phone lines now. Gibbs, you said you've got some gems, GEMs for us.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Who's up first?
Let's go with Exslavic in Brooklyn.
All right. Let's do it.
Put him up.
He's up.
Hey,
what's up,
you
man?
Doing? Hey, good. How you doing, man? Hey, first-time caller.
Big great, man. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
A big-time Browns fan. I'm 54 years old. I went through Red Rug 88. Went through hell there, buddy, to be honest with you. But I was a little bit about Hugh Jackson. I think the guy's a fantastic choice. I think Cleveland is going to do damn good this year. And, you know, I think that quarterback situation, I think we do need a quarterback.
I mean, yes.
As far as it goes with the quarterback situation, I like, you know, I like the kid from, I think it's LSU, not LSU. What's
Cal.
His name?
Cal,
yeah,
Jared Cal. Goff.
Cal, Jared Goff.
Yeah, Jared Goff, yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, the kid's got a strong arm, but he's got to get his percentage down in there. He's got to get it right on the money, you know. And as far as that, Josh Gordon, I think we need to give the kid a chance. I think he's straightened up a little bit more than Johnny Manziel ever did.
I would certainly think that there's more upside and more potential there. I would agree with you on that one. 216-578-0850. Gibbs, who's next?
Why
Daquan in Cleveland?
Yeah, why are you making me intro?
Because I didn't get any text.
Hello?
From you.
Oh,
you
really?
Yeah. Then Wilhelm, go ahead. You intro him.
Daquan in Cleveland. What's up, man?
We had Daquan yesterday. What's up, man?
Good afternoon. How you guys doing?
Good, brother.
I have a couple things I want to talk about. You know, I'm available for a Browns GM position if they want to interview me.
We will let Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta know.
First, I would like to make a Super Bowl prediction. I say Panthers versus Broncos and Panthers win.
Okay.
Also,
Wilhelm-esque.
Also, we'll always be a Browns fan no matter what. Okay, I'm for the Browns. I hate hearing people say we need to draft a quarterback in the first round this year, but we need to fill so many positions. If you want to draft a quarterback in the first round, wait until the next year and draft Deshaun Watson. If we must draft
but that's
a quarterback
like
this year.
Assuming that we can for sure have the number one pick next year.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Hopefully that's not the case. If we must draft the quarterback this year into the fourth round or later, I believe our starting quarterback for next year is already on our roster. Josh Gordon is coming back, but still in
Who's,
our first
And who
round,
is that that's on our roster, the starting quarterback for next year?
Connor Shaw.
Okay.
Josh Gordon is coming back.
I would say, unfortunately, Connor Shaw has a better chance of not being a Cleveland Brown next year than he does of being the opening day starting quarterback.
I would bet a lot of money at the window.
Where's the guy? Where's the $1 million guy? Does he want to? Can we get a double down on that? Can we get a double down on that $1 million guy?
I agree. That's it.
No more callers?
No more.
Okay. All right. 216-578-0850. Zagura and Wilhelm here. By the way, on Twitter, you can tweet us, use the question hashtag AskCBD. And pretty much it's unanimous. Everybody wants to play Josh Gordon. I don't think anybody at all thinks for one second that you got to move on from Josh Gordon. And it's funny, the perception of Josh Gordon as a problem child, I believe, has been so – people kind of like the fact that he's out there, he's taking care of business, he's doing his job, and they're comparing it to Johnny Manziel and Justin Gilbert as two guys that they don't see with the potential, where you've seen Gordon actually produce in the NFL, and they think his problems seem to be less.
No, you're absolutely right, and I think when given an opportunity, you know, Josh Gordon in this year has proven that. Let's go back to the phones. We got Tony in Dover. What's up, Tony?
Hey, fellas, what's going on?
Good, man.
Hey, real quick. I called you guys the other day, and I lost you, but I think the Tennessee Titans have it right, and I think that the Browns should implement the same idea. I think with the number two overall pick, if there's somebody you don't fall in love with, I think you should call around, kind of like what the Rams did with the Redskins, because I feel one player this year really isn't going to change the team to potentially be at 8-8 or 9-7, even with getting Josh Gordon back. So I try to see if I can trade spots in the first round this year and then try to stockpile maybe two or three first-round picks like the Rams did, because there's going to be a team maybe like the Cowboys or the Bears that might fall in love with a Joey Bosa or that Paxton Lynch out of Memphis that really like them are going to jump up and give them those picks. But thanks for the time, fellas.
I would say that if you get a franchise quarterback, it dramatically changes this franchise. We have not had one since 1999. So if you get one, that changes your franchise. If there isn't a quarterback that you like that much, I absolutely would advocate trading down. That's me. I think that it's a great idea to accumulate as many assets as possible. But if you can get a franchise quarterback and you believe one of them merits that, you get them. And I think we've been over that a bazillion times. That's just what that is my philosophy. That's what I believe. There's no way that I'm changing what I believe. I think the NFL has proven it without question. You need to have a franchise quarterback.
It has. And the four teams remaining prove that.
All have franchise quarterbacks.
Yes.
Yes. The day of a team making it with a Trent Dilfer, I think, are over. Alex Smith would have been the closest to that, but I think Alex Smith was a better quarterback than Trent Dilfer.
I would have to say, and if you read into some of the comments that Peyton Manning has made since defeating the Pittsburgh Steelers,
that he's Trent Dilfer.
That he is a Trent Dilfer-ish type of feel, that it's the defense carrying this football team, and he's doing just enough, you know, as the leader on offense, to keep us in games, to limit the mistakes, to allow the defense to set the tone for what this football team accomplishes.
I agree, and let's go back.
Yeah,
I think there's some truth to that. They certainly aren't winning because
correct
of Peyton Manning, and he'd be the first to acknowledge that.
And I think that I saw the stat yesterday somewhere. They won seven football games this year by 7 points or less.
Uh huh.
Something of that. It was over five. They won over five football games this year by 7 points or less. And what that means to me personally is you got a good group of guys that limit mistakes, both offensively and defensively. You got a defense that limits what an offense can do.
Yep.
So that offense can't move the ball at will, even in 2 minute, 4 minute situations to get in, to get that touchdown, to get down and get that game winning field goal, whatever it is. It's great. Or when, whether it's Brock Osweiler or Peyton Manning needed to make those plays, they did enough to kill the game by getting consecutive first downs or move the ball down the field to kick a game-winning field goal or score the game-winning touchdown to put it out of reach.
Absolutely. And they got – well, and maybe they gave up a late field goal to make it go from 10 to 7, so it could be a 7-point
win. Of course, sure. But not getting the 7 initially.
Of course. No, your point is very valid. Trent Dilfer, by the way, in their Super Bowl season, barely averaged 150 yards a game passing and threw 12 touchdowns with 11 interceptions.
What do they rush for?
I don't know. I just have his numbers. Trent Dilfer never threw for 3,000 yards in a season. The numbers are changing. And tomorrow we're going to get into Bill Barnwell wrote a great article, which I tweeted out, just about the differences over the last 30 years in the average quarterback, the stats of an average quarterback. It's phenomenal. Let's go to Brian in Connecticut now. Brian.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, man.
Draft situation to me, and you guys, I got a question first. If the Browns were to contact Tennessee and want to get up to one, what would you say the percentage chances is they're doing that for the quarterback?
I think slim to none. I just don't see these guys. Now, the analytics and the process and the strategy that they implement may say getting a quarterback matters above all else, but I don't think this is going to be a group that trades up. I do think if they were going to trade up, the only thing that they would trade up for is a quarterback. That's it.
So then if you're Tennessee, you would, why would you not, like, I think Tennessee, if you're a GM in Tennessee, you would take the Browns offer almost over anybody else's for a simple fact that you're going to go down to two. You're still going to get assets. You're still in play for whatever player that's on your board because they don't need the quarterback. And on top of it, now they've got teams calling them to come up to two where they can attain more assets on a second deal to move down a few more spots. I just think if the Browns contacted them about moving up, I wouldn't let them off the phone.
I think that it is possible, but for the Browns, I don't know if they want to give anything. I don't think Tennessee is going to trade out of their first pick. If they do, they're going to have to get a lot for it, and I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, there's thought behind his take, and it's gain access, assets by moving back, and then moving back again for someone else who wants to take their it guy at number two. But is there an it guy?
Is there? We'll find out.
I mean, yeah, beyond, if Jared Goff is the Browns guy, is there an it guy that Tennessee can't move out of number one for? Or is another team fall in love with a guy that's an it guy, a Bosa, a Tunsil, that they must have to make that move?
We'll find that. We have months and months to talk about such things, and we will see. There we go. And when we come back, Bucky Brooks from NFL.com released his top 50, his first big board. We'll take a look at that. We'll talk to him about it, who's on it, who isn't on it. It's top 32 is out for Bucky Brooks. Interesting guy at the top of the ranking, and from the quarterback position, he's got 1, 2, 3 in his top 32, 4 in his top 32, actually, but only 2 in the top 30, 31, 32, both quarterbacks, and he's got an interesting ranking in line kind of with what we've been talking about here on CBD. Bucky Brooks up next on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Zagur and Wilhelm here on CBD. I want to quote my guy, Stephen Lamatrice, on Twitter. He says, anyone who thinks you don't need a franchise quarterback is lost. Did you see anybody in the playoffs without one? William Doring says, what's your opinion on Kevin Hogan from Stanford? I like Kevin Hogan. I think if we did a two quarterback type of a thing, I will go ahead. I wouldn't mind Hogan as our second quarterback. Smart guy, Stanford, Pac-10 winning, which doesn't matter, but nonetheless.
I think even, you know, look at the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, almost winning, you know, the playoff game with A.J. McCarron. Had it been Andy Dalton, the likelihood that they win that football game, who is their franchise quarterback, is significantly higher. And I think that's a great example of not having your franchise quarterback and having your franchise quarterback who had a very good year.
Yep.
The difference is winning and losing.
Absolutely.
It's plain and simple. With him, high likelihood they win. Without him, they could win with A.J. McCarron on a short week. And they should have won, but ultimately they didn't.
Yeah.
They didn't.
They did not win in that one. Top 5 prospects by position, Bucky Brooks releasing that in addition to his big board. Quarterbacks, Goff, Wentz, Cook, Lynch, Hackenberg. Running backs, Ezekiel Elliott, number one
My
there.
Guy.
Wide receivers, he's got Laquon Treadwell, Corey Coleman, Josh Doctson, Tyler Boyd, then Michael Thomas from the Buckeyes. Nick Vannett, the Ohio State tight end, is his number two tight end. Interesting that the guy from Alabama, O.J. Howard, didn't climb into the top 5. We'll bring him on now from NFL.com. Bucky Brooks joining us on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. Bucky, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
Great to have you. You released your big board today, the top 32 prospects in the draft as you see it. Jalen Ramsey, number one. Joey Bosa, number two. And then a guy of great interest to Cleveland fans right now who you assigned to the Browns in your first mock draft at number 6, Jared Goff. Let's talk for a second about Goff. Your thoughts on him. Is he a franchise quarterback?
You know, Jared Goff is a very, very good quarterback prospect. I think Jared Goff could be a franchise quarterback. Like most quarterbacks, he needs to be surrounded by the right talent. But of all the quarterbacks in this class, I think he and maybe the next guy after him, Carson Wentz, are the two that I'll probably get the most excited about.
When you look at a big board like this, let's say you are the Browns and your big board, you know quarterback is an issue that has plagued this organization. You have him, say, 6th. You have Bosa as the second quarterback. best player on your board when you're picking second overall. Is taking the sixth guy on your board, explain that to people listening. Is that a reach to take the sixth guy on your board at number two, given the position of quarterback? How do you kind of look at that big board when you're actually in the draft process?
Okay, so for every team, so for the Cleveland Browns, everybody's board looks differently based on how they grade players, what their needs are, how they kind of envision building their team. So my board is just basically like a generic board based on how I see players just from a talent perspective.
Okay.
If we did it where it was scheme specific, the board may change based upon what I'm judging people on.
Okay.
When it comes to evaluating prospects, like if you're the Cleveland Browns and so you identify Jared Goff and you take a look at Jared Goff, you assess the talent, you assess the potential, and if you view him to be the best player on your board, you take him without a problem. If you're working from a vertical board that features maybe 150 names, ideally, you would like to pluck the names off in order because that is how they're graded. As long as you go according to plan, you always are assured of taking the best player the way that you see it.
Yep.
You're fine. In Cleveland, I think that the board will be manipulated to have a quarterback at the top of the board so then they can say that they followed the process and the process led them to take the best player, and that best player just happens to coincidentally also be a quarterback.
Okay, so Bucky, for to kind of talk about that same light, and as you evaluate the top of the draft, we just recently had someone on from the Tennessee Titans, both talking about Ray Horton and, of course, the number one pick just ahead of the Cleveland Browns. They said, you know, the new GM is shopping that pick because they have so many needs. Do you feel that's a good position for the Tennessee Titans to move out of number one? And if they do move out of number one, who do you see likely moving potentially ahead of the Cleveland Browns, and would the interest be in a quarterback?
I think it would have to be around the quarterback. The only way you want to move up into that first seat is to get a quarterback that you deem to be a franchise guy. I think of all the players in the draft, I don't know if there's a guy, like a marquee guy, that anyone covets per se as like this is the guy that certainly changes the game. Normally that is tied to a quarterback. So if anyone wants to move up ahead of Cleveland, they're moving up to get a quarterback. They anticipate Cleveland taking a quarterback at two.
Bucky, as you look, if you are the Browns, and let's say you get Goff, and you talk about the talent surrounding him, when you come back at pick 32, which the Browns have this year because New England doesn't have a first-round pick, is that where you would maybe look to get a wide receiver to go with him and kind of build that young duo? Because I think we've seen success for certainly Derek Carr and Blake Bortles because the team surrounded them with young playmaking talent.
You know, that's what it's always about. Like, as much as we talk about the quarterback, and there are only a handful of guys, maybe two or three guys in the National Football League, that can make their team better without being surrounded with the right parts. You have to think about how can I surround my young quarterback with the weapons to thrive. One, I need to make sure that I have a playmaker on the perimeter that can catch the ball. Also need to have a strong running game. So if I'm looking at the Cleveland Browns, I need to make sure I get one of those two things resolved. And so in looking at the draft, there's certainly some nice receivers. I would say that this class is not like the previous two classes where we've seen guys come and make immediate splashes like an Odell Beckham Jr., like an Amari Cooper, like some of the other young players that have hit. But there's certainly guys that you can build around and that you can find as nice companions to go along with a young quarterback.
And Bucky, again, we're in the Buckeye State. I think nine underclassmen have declared. So Urban Meyer's cupboards are going to be clean until he refills them here very shortly with the new recruiting class. You've got five of those guys getting drafted in the first round. Just give an overview of the guys you've got. I think, you know, you got Elliott, Bosa, Darren Lee, you know, a surprising guy that came out early, Taylor Decker coming, I think Eli Apple, you know, late in the first round. But why Michael Thomas I've seen in a couple mock drafts in the first round. What's keeping a guy like Michael Thomas, I think you have your fourth or fifth receiver at the group, what's keeping him from being a first-round talent?
You know, I think a lot of it is dependent. Like the wide receiver position in general, I don't know if there's a lot of separation between like the top guy and the fifth guy. I think it comes down to what you really like. As much as I like Laquon Treadwell, I know that Laquon Treadwell is not a burner. And so if you're looking for a guy that can stretch the field and do some other things, that's not necessarily what he does. And Michael Thomas, you have a talented player, a guy that has been very, very productive. He's been solid the last 2 years. I don't know how fast he's going to run. Now, my history with Michael Thomas goes all the way back to high school because I coach high school ball in L.A. I coached and played against him when he was at Taft High School with Michael Berkovici. So I've seen him grow. I've seen him mature. He is a guy that is a very talented player. Speed will ultimately be the deciding factor on whether he can sneak into the first round. How he performs at the combine will go a long way to determining whether he's a guy that hears his name called on day one.
Talk with Bucky Brooks, who released his top 32 big board. And, Bucky, you put Jalen Ramsey right at the top of that board, one ahead of Joey Bosa and Laremy Tunsil, who are guys that we've seen a lot at the top of boards. How did you come to that conclusion with those three? And are any of them can't miss? Because, you know, it's interesting, just doing this radio show, I happen to like Goff. I know the Browns need a quarterback, so I'll talk about him. People almost view position players as being can't miss and quarterbacks coming with a lot of risk. And history would say that's not true. Just look at Jadeveon Clowney. But, you know, how did you come to this with these three, and are any of them in your mind can't miss?
Oh, I don't know if anybody's a can't miss prospect. There are a lot of things that go with having success as a pro. You have to be surrounded in the right system. You have to have the right mental makeup to handle the pressure of being a top pick. And you have to be in a situation where the team allows you to play to your strength. So scheme fit is one of the most important things that you can look for. When I look at those three guys, Ramsey, Bosa, and Laremy Tunsil, all those guys are blue-chip talent. All those guys are guys that have the potential to be Pro Bowl caliber players. Are they necessarily transcendent stars? I would say no. But I think in the right system, all of those guys can have a ton of success. When it comes down to me with Jalen Ramsey separating between he and Joey Bosa and Tunsil, I think Jalen Ramsey is the best football player in college football. I think he's the best football player in the draft in terms of what he brings to the table. Not only the production, the position versatility, the way he plays, the competitive mindset, he has all those things. I think you can make the argument that Joey Bosa brings the same kind of traits to the table. The one thing that I'll say about Bosa is I see a very, very good player, a guy who does a lot of things. I don't necessarily know if he's like a Julius Peppers who was taken number one or number two, if he's a transcendent playmaker at that position. I liken him, and I don't want to do like the white-on-white thing. Like, I don't think that's necessarily fair when you compare players.
Sure.
But I will say, if you think about what Chris Long has been able to do, a very high-end productive player, is he necessarily the guy that absolutely puts the defensive line on his back? I don't know. But in the right system, you get a blue-collar player, a guy that brings a lot of production, a guy who has the necessary toughness. I think Joey Bosa brings those skills to the table. I think he can have a very, very successful and a very high-end career as a National Football League player.
Bucky, the Senior Bowl is coming up in the next couple of weeks down in Mobile, Alabama. Again, will you be down there? And essentially, who playing in the Senior Bowl do you feel has a strong opportunity to get drafted extremely high in the NFL draft?
I think the name that everyone is going to look at after the Senior Bowl will be Carson Wentz.
Yep.
The quarterback from North Dakota State. And I am not one who necessarily falls in love with small school standouts, because I think level of competition does matter when it comes to the evaluation process. But I will say this about Wentz. Wentz has all the attributes that you look for in a franchise quarterback. He's tough. He's smart. He has tremendous arm talent. He can make every throw that you want to see on the field. He played in a system that allowed him to do some of the pro-style things that you look for while also retaining some of the spread concepts. And when I look at him as an athlete, and I hate to throw this name out there, but I would say he plays in an offense that allows him to do some of the things that Cam Newton does with the Carolina Panthers, the quarterback run game, the movement game, being able to roll out. He is not the talent that Cam Newton is, but if you think about the development and the progression that Cam Newton has made in his career, I believe that Carson Wentz can follow that path and have the same kind of impact on a franchise if given time to develop and do those things.
Speaking of time to develop, you look at what, for example, Washington did when they took RG3 and then Kirk Cousins in the middle, and then you look at kind of what Cincinnati, they had Andy Dalton, but they selected A.J. McCarron in the middle rounds. Who's somebody that if the Browns were to say go Goff or Wentz at number two and then take a quarterback in the middle rounds, who is somebody that you like? And also, we had a caller call up and tell me he would offer me $1 million if Cardale Jones is not one of the top three quarterbacks taken in this draft. So answer the first question, then tell me where you think Cardale Jones goes in this draft.
I think the name that could be a nice sleeper would be Brandon Allen from Arkansas.
Okay.
Quarterback that has been very productive in the SEC, plays in a pro-style system. Kind of an easy evaluation. So if you're a quarterback guru who has a system that is very, very pro-style in terms of how you get it done, I think you can kind of plug him in and he can have success. Cardale Jones. I think Cardale Jones is a great mystery. He's kind of an enigma. A lot of talent,
You can't argue his arm talent in terms of being able to throw it all over the field.
Yep.
He has won games. The problem with Cardale is the more that he played, the more that you were able to see some of the work. He's a developmental prospect. And so last year he probably could have come out and kind of skated in and maybe been a bottom of the first, top of the second player. This year I think he may drop. But who knows? I think he's talented enough to earn a starting job in the league in time. I think someone would be valuing that, and I think he'd have his opportunity. But I don't expect him to be one of the top three quarterbacks taken in the draft.
$1 million. Let's go.
Bucky, one last quick question. Again, it does kind of, you know, circle around the Buckeyes. Just your perspective on Braxton Miller, how he'll transform into a potential NFL wide receiver, and then also another surprising early declaration from Ohio State, Jalen Marshall, and where will these guys get drafted, and how do you think, do they become a developmental player somewhere in the National Football League?
You know, it's tough. You know, that evaluation is going to be tough. Braxton Miller, I don't think Braxton Miller will get out of the second round. I think Braxton Miller is an explosive athlete, a guy who showed you in flashes that he can make an impact. In the right system with the right coach, he could be developed and really turn into a nice asset. If you think about what Percy Harvin was able to do, I think it's no surprise that teams will view him as a Percy Harvin-like athlete and try and view him as a commodity like that. Jalen Marshall is a bit of a surprise in terms of why he came out. I had Jalen when he was in high school at a couple of Nike events. I thought he was a tremendous talent. I thought he had potential to be a very, very good player. I think that potential is unrealized because he hasn't spent enough time in school. I think people will view him as a punt returner, hybrid specialist, someone that you can develop. But I think if he had stayed in school, he certainly would have helped his chances of being a prospect that would have gone in the first 2 days.
Bucky, this is the last one for me. For when you watch quarterbacks, because a lot of people, you know, out there like to be, you know, armchair scouts and get into it. What are the things, if you could just talk quickly about something that it is that you look for in a quarterback, or what your eyes are drawn to when watching the tape of a quarterback that helps you in your evaluation process?
The two most important things in quarterback play are accuracy and decision making. Are they accurate with the ball? Can they put the ball where it needs to be put? Can they throw it in the tight windows? Can they get it to the receivers within the strike zone? And do they make good decisions with the ball? You can't turn the ball over. You have to be able to read coverage. And can you see them work through progressions to get the ball to the guy that is open based on the coverage? And so I look at those things. I think the other thing that you have to look at is you have to look at the system that they play in. Are they set up for success? Because the system has a lot of layups, a lot of bubble screens, a lot of quick passes, a lot of things that we call pick-and-stick throws where he catches it, turns to the right or left, and just fires the ball immediately. Or are they asked to do some higher-level stuff? And so if your guy can go through and you can see him make reads where he goes from the first to the second to maybe even the third read, that is a guy that has the opportunity if he has the accuracy and he has his decision-making to take care of the football. Hugh Jackson has really opened the book and told people exactly what he expects from the quarterback.
Yes.
If you listen to the radio interviews and you see the stuff that he's put out there, he has said exactly what he wants. And so I think if you just kind of connect the dots, you'll be able to see the quarterback that will eventually wear a Browns uniform because he's kind of laid it out there for you.
cough. We will see. Bucky, appreciate the time as always. Great stuff.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right, Bucky Brooks there. Phenomenal stuff. And you can, of course, follow him on Twitter at Bucky Brooks and see his big board right now. You can grab that at NFL.com. He's the NFL media analyst, and he has the mock draft. He's got his top five per position. So he's got a lot of good stuff that you can certainly take a look at Bucky Brooks on Twitter is where you follow him. All right, that will do it for now. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up with our final thoughts here. Zagura Wilhelm Gibbs, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Larry Ford.
You think you know me.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, Wilhelm, we'll see what you bring tomorrow. I think this is strong. People on Twitter like it, but you hate it. So if you hate it, I don't want it to be our song if you hate it. That's how I feel.
And what if I feel the same way about all five?
You won't. It's ridiculous.
See,
if you do.
It doesn't matter. Nathan is like, you'll like one. I'm going to
be
right.
I might like, I might like one of his songs better. I might like Sanford and Son the best at the end of the day. I might like your songs, Gibbs.
Some doozies coming.
I find it hard to believe that he wouldn't like. I'm not saying I find it hard to believe he wouldn't like one of my songs. I find it hard to believe I wouldn't like one of his songs. Equal, Gibbs, jerk.
The jerk store is open.
And you are on sale.
Yeah.
50% off.
In abundance. Abodadza.
The buffet.
Yeah, it is a buffet. So.
Almost like Mopedman.
No, Mopedman's a class act.
Where the heck has he been?
Tough on tires, but a fine man.
Damn compressor.
Compressor. Tough on pizzas. You know, Bucky Brooks, interesting, good stuff there. He kind of agrees, it sounds like, with where we're at with the quarterbacks, that it's Goff and then Wentz and then a pretty big gap. So I think that that's pretty good. I like that. I like what he looks for, decision-making, accuracy. I wanted, if we had more time with him, we had to get to another interview. I was going to ask him about how important footwork is to him.
Yeah, I was just going to say, good. That was my next question as well.
You know, I'm sure we'll have him back on again before the draft, and we'll talk to him out at the combine. But some good stuff there for the Browns. But as he said, expect the Browns board to have a quarterback at the top of it, as it should.
As it should.
If you're the Browns.
And I think it should have for the last 3 years as well.
Probably, yes.
Indeed. Whether it's realistic or not, it should.
Do it.
Shoot the J.
For Bucky, we want to thank Bucky Brooks for being with us. Thanks, Teresa Walker, for being with us from Tennessee. She does not think Ray Horton is back there. Good chance he could end up here, she thinks. We'll see. All right, stay tuned for the Golden Boys, for Gibbs, for Wilhelm. I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Driven by Liberty Ford.
Oh.
The preceding program was a production of the Cleveland Browns and a part of the Browns Media Network.